Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
How's it going, Ben?
It's going well. How about yourself?
It's just another day in paradise. And I think it's going to be really fun. We're going to talk about groups today, right?
Exactly. I mean, what's better than groups?
There's lots of things that are better than groups, you know, the beach. But we'll get there. Hopefully, we'll figure it all out.
Yeah, exactly. So to begin with, what are groups?
Groups. Well, that's an interesting question because you can look up groups in a bunch of different places. So when you go into things like purchasing Office 365, they'll talk about this thing called Office 365 groups. And you'll say, well, gee, that sounds really cool. And then you'll go look at what groups are and it'll tell you, oh, here it's a thing with a shared mailbox and it's got a shared calendar and it's a SharePoint site and it's a Yammer group and it's a planner plan and it's all these other things. But that doesn't mean that groups takes over those things, right? The SharePoint's still SharePoint and Planner is still Planner and Power BI is still Power BI. So you've got to kind of go a level above that. And really what we get to when we're a level above that is a security construct. So a group or an Office 365 group is really a membership construct. So it has a container to hold members within it. And then that membership is applied to all those little things that live underneath its umbrella, right? So it's kind of like the One Ring. You'll go ahead and apply some membership at that level, and it'll bleed down to all those services for you. So it sits on top of everything, rules the membership of all those products underneath them. And then really, you can go ahead and still customize those sub-products to your heart's content.
All right. So does that work kind of like... I know there's security groups too, especially for those of you that came from an AD background, distribution groups. Is it kind of like a security group then from that standpoint of just managing permissions on everything?
It's kind of like a security group and a distribution group rolled together. So if you think about traditional DGs, this is really where Microsoft is taking kind of next level distribution groups is over into these Office 365 groups and that construct. It's not a traditional security group in the sense that it only lives in Azure Active Directory. I can't actually use it as a security ACL in other things yet. Maybe someday we'll be able to do that, like dynamic Azure AD security groups, things like that. That'd be really neat. But it does live in Azure AD and sit up at that level.
Okay. Very cool. So it's just a roll-up of a whole bunch of different services. And like you said, lets you secure them, share them with external people, do all kinds of fun things with groups.
I think where people struggle with it is they tend to think about it as all these other things, and it's really all those things and none of them at the same time. It's ultimately just a membership management system, right? So I'm going to have people, and people are going to have certain access rights to things, and those things can be varied, but I'm going to manage the membership of that all in one place. So what happens is, you know, it's interesting you mentioned distribution groups versus security groups. When you look at things on the back end and the way we manage these all these bits and pieces, so you'll have commandlets for things like managing distribution groups in Exchange, and you would have things like managing security groups in Azure AD. And very similar to this, so Office 365 groups, their nomenclature on the back end is they're what's known as a unified group. So there's a set of commandlets around managing unified groups and all the things that come into play with that. They're actually managed in kind of two places today. So all those unified group commandlets come out of Exchange. And then you do have some other Azure AD, like pure Azure AD commandlets for managing things at the tenant level that you can go in and apply there. So it's a little split-brained, but it's kind of coming together. I think one of the things that happens is when you sit down just from a user side, it's really confusing because there's no place where you go in any of the user interfaces to say, give me Office 365 groups, whether you're on a desktop, so PC or Mac and in a web browser, or even down to a mobile device. You know, if I go on my iPhone and I want to access my groups, I actually access them through the Outlook Groups app, not the Office 365 groups, because that would make too much sense to have it named the right thing, that big unified group thing and giving me a browsing mechanism for that.
Yeah, I know that's been one of my struggles too. Users ask about it. They're like, well, how do I access all of this stuff? And it is. I know Outlook for the Mac, they just finally rolled, well, they're starting to roll groups into it. I can get to that group mailbox that you mentioned, but I'm unable to do anything else with the group from my Outlook client. So most of the time, I spend accessing those groups in my browser. Outlook on the PC, you have a little bit more functionality, but I do. I find myself going a whole bunch of different places to access stuff. Some of it, sometimes it's an Outlook, sometimes it's actually going to the SharePoint site behind the group. Like you said, the mobile device is just kind of strange that it's still called Outlook groups.
Well, I mean, that's what they are, right? They're Outlook groups when I access them through email. They're Office 365 groups when I access them through like an administrative interface. And then they are just the products that sit underneath them when I want to access them through a web browser, right? So if I want to interact with a group's conversation stream in a shared mailbox, I've got to go into Outlook to do that. And then I'll be presented with a browsing mechanism to view that conversation stream straight inside of Outlook Web Access. And if I want to interact with the shared calendar, same thing. I'm going to go into Outlook. It's part of Outlook Web Apps. If I want to interact with the full SharePoint site, well, I'm going to be over in my tenant's SharePoint URL. So contoso.sharepoint.com/site/group1, right? And having that kind of full-on SharePoint experience. So it's very much about understanding that groups isn't really a thing. It's kind of an ethereal ghost hanging above our heads. But you're really talking about, let's manage membership in a single place, have it apply to all these sub-products at once.
Yeah. So one thing listeners might be curious about is, where do you actually go to create these groups? I know there's a whole bunch of different ways you can create them. One option for creating them is in that admin center. So your admins can very easily go in, create a new Office 365 group. It spins up the group, all of the services associated with it. If you want users to create groups, you also can go into your Outlook 2016 client on the PC, spin them up there. You can go to Outlook on the web, spin them up from there. And the other place you can actually enable it or disable it is on that kind of that SharePoint landing page in Office 365. Where it lists out all your SharePoint sites you're following, all your recent SharePoint sites. Right at the top, you have a create site. Well, it doesn't change the text of that create site. You can set it up. So create site there actually creates an Office 365 group as well.
Yep. There's a ton of places you can do it, right? So it gets a little confusing sometimes because just from that administrative side, say you go into the admin portal and you go to even create something like if you go into just the admin portal and say, I want to create a distribution group. If you're not careful and you don't do it in the right place, it'll actually create an Office 365 group sometimes. You've always got to kind of know where you are and what you're doing. And, you know, you've got kind of those, let's call them like the user side stuff where users can go and create them, or even as an admin, I can go and create them. But you also have a bunch of really fine-grained control over who is allowed to create those things, right? So I can go in kind of at that tenant level, and I can say that only people, maybe I want only people in the IT security group to be able to go ahead and create Office 365 groups. So that way you can have those controls available to let certain people spin groups up, and then everybody else wouldn't even see them, right? They wouldn't have rights to do that.
Yep, absolutely. And another thing is, when you do create the Office 365 group, like you said, it encompasses all those servers, but it also spins up a whole bunch of those different services. So it's not like you even create that Office 365 group and then add those services to it. When you create that Office 365 group, it actually goes in the background and provisions that group mailbox, that ties it directly to a calendar. It spins up a site collection for you to store all of your files in. It enables a OneNote notebook on that site collection. It spins up a planner plan. So you automatically have a planner plan that's tied to that group. And then it even lets you tie into different connectors, which we can talk a little bit more about later, and gives you just that unified interface to be able to access all of those different features within a group, but then lets you go directly to some of those as well to leverage them more. So For instance, the SharePoint site, it's something you and I are both familiar with. When you click on the Files tab in a group, you just see a very high-level overview of the files. You get the file names, activity, how old it is, who modified it, but you don't have that experience like you do in a SharePoint library of being able to see different metadata, create different views, even if you have folders. Folders don't show up. So it's just a list of all your files. You can still create new files, upload new files, but it's very limited if you're used to working in a document library. The nice thing is because it's SharePoint on the background, they actually give you that ability to go in, browse the SharePoint library, and get that nice, rich library experience we're used to, or even to browse directly to the site living in the background. So you can work with the site. There's this news portion of the site that they're rolling out, especially when you start getting into the new modern pages, modern UI. But you have that full rich SharePoint experience still living underneath the site that you can access and use.
I think it's really hard to be a user and have to do some of this stuff, particularly when it comes to after it's been created, how do I interact with it? You know, I don't think anybody's going to come out and say that the navigation for getting around to those subproducts within a group is awesome. It's not. It's horrible. It's confusing. It's really bad. You know, I don't know how Microsoft's really made it this far. It's kind of scary how disjointed it is. So what happens is you really have to not only understand how do I get to it, but how does it behave? So you talked about something like files. So today, that files browser from when I'm within the Outlook web app side of things, it's really bare bones. But where they want to take that is, ultimately, that should be one view of all my files in my group, regardless of where they came in, right? So today it's showing just SharePoint files, but eventually what it's going to do is if I say I send an email into a conversation stream into a group in a shared mailbox and it has an attachment, well, that attachment's a file. So I should be able to see that too, right? So eventually that interface is going to surface all those kinds of things. But me as a user, I'm going to have to know that there's one place I can go to view my attachments mixed with all my SharePoint files, or I've got to go over here to view my SharePoint files and see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I know, I feel like the SharePoint files, that whole files view is probably the most confusing aspect of all of it, at least at this point in time.
Well, I mean, the most confusing part is how do I get to a group once it's there? Because you don't actually know. Because, you know, click this button and hold on, I had a planner, but I can only see the planner if I go to the website or if I go to the planner. And then if I go to the plan, but then there's, and how do I get back? I'm lost. It gets confusing really quick. I hope it's something that they can solve over time. I would have hoped they would have kind of worked towards solving it already, but there hasn't been too much done there.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
There's another kind of gotcha in there, right? So I really want to hammer home that it's just it's a membership construct and a container for members. And being that it's managing membership for all these sub-products, you can run into some interesting things there. So say you and I are internally, you know, we're at Contoso and we're doing our thing and we're working together. So I want to add you to a group that I'm already in. So I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to go into Outlook web apps and I'm already the owner of that, or maybe I just do it straight through Outlook. And I go, let's say add Ben to the membership. And, you know, I do that and 30 seconds later, I ping you on Skype and I say, hey, Ben, gave you access. Here's the URL. Click this, go there. And then you'll click it and you won't have access. And say, that's weird. I added you. Let me go see if I added you. Yep. Yep. Oh, yep. There's Ben. He's a member for sure. Go ahead and click the URL again. Well, I still can't get there. And then half an hour later, you're sitting there going, well, crap, I still can't get there. And then 35 minutes later, you get a email that says, welcome to the group. And now magically you can just get in, right? Because there's a bunch of scheduled tasks and kind of asynchronous things happening in the background. When you've added that member, it's got to go out and there's kind of a job that has to kick off on the back end and say, all right, go give Ben access to that mailbox. Go give Ben access to the SharePoint site. Go give Ben access to the planner plan. Go give Ben access to, you know, XYZ all the way down the line. And that takes some time. And that tends to be super confusing just on the end user side. And it can be pretty frustrating as an admin too when people come to you and they say, hey, I added somebody and they can't get in. It's like, did you wait an hour maybe? Got to do that sometimes.
Yeah, be patient. It's a Microsoft product. It doesn't always happen right away.
Yeah, collaboration's not immediate.
Yeah. I know another one that I've found confusing too, at least up until recently, was I had questions with, well, I have this shared mailbox in groups. I have shared mailboxes that I can just create an exchange. But then I also had these site mailboxes in my SharePoint site that Microsoft came out with, was a few years ago that they rolled that in. Was it SharePoint 2013 where those first started showing up?
2013 or 2010. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, one of those. But for a while, I was getting questions, well, do I create a site mailbox or do I create a group? The good thing is site mailboxes are no more. They recently killed them. And now if you want to tie a mailbox directly to a SharePoint site like you used to do with site mailboxes, these Office 365 groups are the way to go. I was actually talking to somebody the other day that went to create a site mailbox and it said, oh, sorry, you can't do this anymore. They no longer exist. Go create an Office 365 group instead.
Yeah. It's a little disingenuous to say, here you go, just go create this other thing, because they're not equivalent functionality, right? So over time, we've been losing features of SharePoint and Office 365 and SharePoint Online. So things like site mailboxes, yes, they're going away. We've never really had access to things like email-enabled document libraries. And these are parts of the stack that are consumed quite a bit in most of the on-premises installations that I've worked on and been a part of in kind of my consulting days and things, right? So they're just not available. So really, you know, when you say a site mailbox goes away, well, if I want like full-on equivalent functionality of that, a group's not going to cut it for me. I'm going to have to create a shared mailbox, and then I'm going to have to put some glue in the middle with another service, maybe like Flow or Logic Apps, and spin something up in Azure to go ahead and say, okay, now I've got a kind of service principal or an application that can read that mailbox, do something with the data, and push it over someplace else. So where it used to be click a few buttons and it was just done, now it's click a few buttons, write some logic, write some code, whatever that might be, to actually get it back to where it was or what you need it to do. So yeah, it's far more power user oriented, but it's definitely not equivalent functionality, right? If anything, it took a lot of stuff away.
Right. I agree. And then even from the perspective, like we said, it spins up all this other stuff. If you just want a mailbox, probably don't care about a planner plan and a calendar and all of that. You just want a mailbox tied to your SharePoint site. And yeah, you want to be able to navigate to it easily and know how to get around.
So you do have to know what you want, right? Because there are limitations to these things. So a shared mailbox in a unified group or an Outlook group is not the same as a shared mailbox that you would create in Exchange, right? So for a regular mailbox, I would have things like I would have a root folder in there. I'd be able to create subfolders. I could have rules that fire against that mailbox, all sorts of things, right? And for an Office 365 group, or really that Outlook group that's associated with it in that mailbox, I don't get subfolders. I don't get rules. I've only got one conversation stream, and I'm only going to access it through the Outlook Groups app or Outlook or the web interface. That's it. I'm not going to be able to tie it into like mail.app on my iOS device or Gmail on my Android device or things like that. It's very siloed and it just does what it does, right? It is a single purpose conversation stream and it's literally a stream or sometimes a fire hose, depending on how much traffic's going in and out.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I know I've run into even goofy things too with the site collections. Like we mentioned, when you create a group, you spin up those SharePoint site collections. If you've ever tried to go in and find one of those site collections to maybe change some of the external sharing or change some of those settings that you have access to in the SharePoint admin side of things, you'll find that none of these site collections actually show up.
They don't exist.
Yeah, they're super secret site collections.
They are super secret. They're super secret in the sense that they're not visible through that admin center, right? But they are visible in PowerShell. They are still consuming storage and they are counting against your quotas for your SharePoint tenancy, right? And kind of what goes in there. So you do have to get creative and kind of come up with some other ways to manage them, whether that's looking at things like the reporting APIs and pulling things out that way, and maybe you want to surface it in Power BI or Excel or wherever along the way. Or maybe you go and buy a third-party tool like ShareGate or something that's going to help you kind of surface it up and at least see it really easily and what's going on there. One of the interesting things, so you mentioned like going into SharePoint and managing the SharePoint site for a group like you would a traditional SharePoint site. And very much just like those Outlook mailboxes or that Exchange mailbox with a single conversation stream, a SharePoint site that is associated with a group isn't necessarily a full SharePoint site. It's still a different thing, right? So it's been customized. Microsoft is managing it to a certain degree. And there are things that you can't do in there that you might think you'd want to be able to do. One we run into all the time is Microsoft is talking about, here's modern web pages. And yeah, you know, they don't have all the web parts, but you can just go ahead and embed whatever you want on the page. And that's awesome in a regular SharePoint site because I can go ahead and control the app domains and the script domains for things like HTML field security. So I can say, hey, I want to be able to embed this report from app.powerbi.com, which is an anonymous embed, on this SharePoint site. And that works great in a vanilla SharePoint site, but you can't do that in a group site because it's locked down and you have no access to the HTML field security settings because Microsoft manages it as part of that service.
Yeah. I'm waiting for them to kind of surface some other way. The biggest one I've run into is the whole external sharing. If you want groups to be able to share it externally or certain ones to be able to be shared externally, I know that's the biggest thing I've run into, that people are like, okay, I have this group. I want to invite some external users to it or control the external sharing. And that primarily is done through that SharePoint admin interface, which you no longer have the option to. So that is one of those where you, well, it's not surfaced in the UI through the browser. You can go in and write the PowerShell. Microsoft has the articles out there on how to do it. So it is supported to go in and change those external sharing settings. So you can a little bit better control what type of external users you're allowed to actually invite to those groups.
Yeah, it's one of those things where from the Microsoft side, I think they're aiming for simplification, right? If you look at the way a lot of this stuff is going, it's very much about kind of the KISS principle. And let's get back to basics. So just because we can go in on the back end and maybe make that modification with PowerShell, that's not to say someday Microsoft's not going to come back and just strip that away and take it away. They've been very methodical in the way they've started to open up things like the SharePoint sites. So I wouldn't be surprised if they come back at some point and they say, you know what, regardless of what customizations you've made to external sharing within your individual groups, we really want you to manage everything with the tenant level controls. And then someday maybe we'll come back and give you another control to let you go kind of group by group. Because what happens is it's more than just SharePoint, right? Because it is a group construct. So being that membership spreads across a bunch of other things, it's a little disingenuous to go in and say like, okay, well, I'm just going to have external people in the SharePoint site, but not in the conversation stream, or maybe I don't want to have them over in Yammer or things like that. It's a little weird. If you're going to go that way, you're almost better off saying, all right, let's spin up a SharePoint site and let's spin up this other thing and spin up this other thing and manage them all separately. Might be a little bit more of a pain, but you get the features you're looking for right out of the gate.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. We're getting close to our time here. A couple more topics. One that I wanted to hit on just because it came out recently was this whole integration now between Yammer groups and Office 365 groups. I know everybody...
Do you have a bleep sound for swears yet?
No, but it's not going to be me. It's going to be everybody listening to this that's going to be like, what are they thinking? So they can worry about their own bleep sounds when they're actually listening to this later.
Yeah. What are they thinking? Well, I mean, we used to have every team or every SharePoint site is going to get a group and every group's going to get a SharePoint site, right? And that's kind of starting to come to fruition in the form of, well, every group's going to get a SharePoint site. And now Yammer is starting to come into that fold too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and have you looked at some of the requirements on how this whole Yammer and groups thing works? It's kind of bizarre. Like you said, they're getting there. I'm hoping this experience improves. But right now, if you want your Yammer group connected to your Office 365 group, you actually have to create the group in Yammer.
Correct.
So you go into Yammer, you create this Yammer group, which then triggers something to go create an Office 365 group. So now you have a Yammer group tied to your Office 365 group, and about the only integration point there is now you have links in your Yammer group to get to those resources in your SharePoint group. You can still have Yammer files and SharePoint files in those Yammer group and SharePoint group, even though they're kind of tied together?
Well, they're not, right? Your files that are uploaded to Yammer live in the Yammer service, and your files that are uploaded to SharePoint live in the SharePoint service. So right. there's two very different things there, because I have two very different sets of things like security controls, and you talked about external sharing and a bunch of other things, right? So features and functionality are not the same depending on where that file lands.
But if they're part of the same group, I'm hoping that at some point in time, those will get to be all the files stored in one place, not two different files, since they're sort of kind of supposed to be groups that are tied together.
So that's the plan over time. I think what's going to happen is, it's kind of like when Microsoft came out and they did the SharePoint thing, right? And they said every team site in SharePoint is going to get a group. And when they did that, everybody kind of freaked out because, well, what's a team site? I've made customizations to my sites. What's it mean to take the membership? And are you going to screw it up? Because groups don't have owners and members and visitors. There's just owners and members, right? And that's it. So it's missing a bunch of those concepts. So they're in the same boat with Yammer, right? They have existing deployments out there, and these existing tenancies, they all live in another service. It's not like they're in Microsoft data centers today, but that's about it. It's still a separate service. So you have an existing Yammer group. Maybe it's been in use for a couple of years. It already has thousands of files. Maybe those files meet your compliance needs or mechanisms that you might have in place. Maybe they don't. Maybe they exceed file sizes you allow, things like that. And they're all part of that Yammer service. So now if I all of a sudden spin up a group, what is the right thing to do with it? Do I keep it in Yammer? Do I push it to SharePoint? Is it Microsoft's job to automatically push that stuff over for me? Or do I want more control of it either from, heck, just being a user and that's my data, or even from the admin side, right? Do we want to keep this stuff? What happens with it? Where does it go along the way?
Right. And I know you run into a very similar scenario too with notes. You still have Yammer notes. You'll still have your OneNote. With those groups, two different sections of notes live in two different places, completely independent from each other. So that's another area we'll have to see.
Yeah, well, one's a text file and one's a OneNote wiki-ish thing, right? Again, yeah. Totally different. It'll be interesting to see where they go with it. I think, you know, the guidance we offer our users is if you're going to create those things, stick to all the newer constructs, right? So even though there is that thing called Yammer files there, just ignore it. Keep all your files in SharePoint, because really I want your stuff there. So I start to gain compliance controls. So now I can go in and do content searches when it's in SharePoint, right? I can't do a content search against things that live in Yammer. So that doesn't give me the warm fuzzies when, you know, somebody comes in and says, hey, we have to find this, or we have a legal blah, blah, blah thing going on. So it's way better if we can kind of get it into the services that have those controls at the end. And that's where Microsoft's going. But you've definitely got to nudge the users and say, go here and do this. And then they come back and they say, well, what happens when I post a Yammer post? Why doesn't that post appear in my Outlook group? Well, because they're different conversation streams. Okay, well, what's the difference between going in the Outlook group and going over here? Well, it's your audience and who you can broadcast to and kind of how intentionally we're... It's really confusing from the user side. So hopefully they simplify all of that over time.
Yep, I agree. One last thing, 30 seconds. I know... You also have these things called teams in Office 365. You have groups in Office 365. They can feel very similar. Why choose a group over a team?
It's really not too much of a question, because teams are built on groups. So they're kind of a superset and a little bit more of that membership construct. So if you spin up a team, you're actually getting a group in the background. And if you have existing groups today, you can go ahead and provision teams on top of those and leverage the data that's already there. So it's another one of those products in the stack, right?
Right. And that's, I've struggled a little bit with, well, since I'm getting a group, do I just always spin up a team? Or are there certain scenarios when I'd spin up a group? Kind of what my advice has been is Teams gives you a little bit more, ties in some of the Skype, the conversation. It makes it a little bit more of that. It essentially adds a Skype type of layer onto your group. So if you don't care about having some instant message conversation, scheduling video meetings, that type of stuff, you can just stick to a group. If you want to add on that superset, use a team. And like you said, the good news is you can always convert a group to a team later.
Yep. You just need to understand your requirements, right? Like everything else. And, you know, you go forth and do great things.
Exactly. And with that, should we call it a wrap?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Another good recording, Scott, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Ben.
Yep, thanks. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.